This is Fresh Air. In his latest novel, Violence, Richard Bausch explores what happens to someone in the aftermath of a violent confrontation. Charles and Carol Connolly are a young couple expecting their first child. During a trip to Chicago, Charles goes to a late-night convenience store and walks in on an armed robbery that turns brutal and bloody when four people are killed. Charles survives along with the owner of the store. Violence is Richard Bausch's fifth novel. He's also written two books of short stories. His twin brother, Robert Bausch, is a novelist as well. Susan Kenney, reviewing Violence for the New York Times, called the novel a masterly exploration of the public and private manifestations of violence. She went on to praise Bausch for his grace of language and detail that goes beyond mere witnessing, straight to the heart. For Charles Connolly, this violent incident is a trigger to his past that leaves him baffled and disturbed by what he remembers.
In Charles's case, I think it just, the idea of violence becomes, it occurs to him quite, it seems, quite casually. He's sitting in a park and he thinks, what if someone came to the park and harmed this woman? Which is a perfectly, in fact, a perfectly rational and explicable thought given what he's been through. But the thought scares him. And it's the fact that the thought scares him that begins to unlock the stuff that's going on inside, the buried memory of violence. And then he begins to fear violence in himself. It seems possible that he would be the agency by which the violence would happen because it occurs to him in the park.
And he imagines hurting his family.
Right. It begins to come to he becomes afraid that he might hurt his family. And this fear, which the readers, I want the reader to know quite well that Charles isn't going to hurt anybody. That it's a subjective kind of walking, as Richard Ford put it, a kind of walking pneumonia-like insanity that he's in. And that it's a thing he has to go through to get back to the root, to the things that happened when he was smaller, where he had not only, you know, people talk about an abusive father, but it wasn't only an abusive father. It was being shuffled from house to house and being in different neighbors' houses and relatives' houses and never really having a sense of a family. And here his wife is about to start one, and, you know, in the abstract and intellectually, he wants a family, but the idea, when it is presented to him in reality, is quite frightening because he's never had it himself. He really doesn't even know what it is.
Do you keep up on psychological issues, or have you been in therapy? You write, it seems like, with a kind of intuitive understanding about that, about families and the psychology or the feelings in families.
Yeah, no, I've never been. I would be afraid to go into therapy. I was afraid they'd probably say, we'll just stay right here. We're going to go to a jacket. I think that you, but I've read all so much of the world's great literature, and I'm not bragging now. I'm reporting on an obsession that from the time I was, I don't know, 16 or 17, I couldn't get enough of it. There was a certain kind of nourishment provided by this stuff that I couldn't get anywhere else in the world, and I wanted to know everything that was ever written or said that was worth remembering. I wanted it to do that to me again, you know, every time, the way it did it to me the first time I read, the first time I read Fitzgerald. I've read The Great Gatsby maybe 500 times.
Really?
I read the book every year for the last 22 years, and sometimes two or three years at a time, you know. And I know I read it a lot more when I was in the Air Force, so. But, there, I think that the insight that you get is given to you, and the subconscious is what gives it to you.
Mm-hmm. You said that you read a lot, and I assume you still do. When did you actually start to write?
I was about 17 or 18 years old, and I got this white quill pen, and I really just went, you know, whole hog, got a little desk, and my parents were always so blithe about it. Was like whatever I wanted to do, I would be able to do it. I mean, I remember once when I was 11 years old saying to my father, I want to be an artist because I could always draw, or heavyweight champion of the world. And my father went into this, you know, tirade. Oh, no, the boxing is so corrupt, and you know, the fighters are all, they never see the money, and these corrupt promoters and everything. And at the time, I was a little ticked at him for, you know, discouraging me, but he wasn't. What a gift that was! I mean, here I was, 11 years old, and a grown-up was taking me utterly seriously that if I wanted to be heavyweight champion, by God, that's what I'd do, and so I better be warned. And it was sort of like that. I mean, that whatever I wanted to tackle. So immediately there was all this encouragement,
yeah.
You know, a typewriter and everything. I think I wrote the first story I ever wrote when I was 14, and my mother read it and said, "This is very good, but it's so morbid, son. How come it's so morbid?"
Well, you were 14, right?
Yeah. Well, everything I've written since then has been pretty much, according to most reports I get from the critics, morbid. But I don't think it's morbid. I think it's redemptive, and it's just about all of the trouble we live with. I can't believe that anyone could want to read fiction that wasn't about trouble. I mean, what the hell? It's like wanting to see a football game with no tackling. I mean, you know? I mean, it's sort of a part of it. It's like, who wants to read a book called How Wonderful We Were and How Happy We Were and What We Ate? You know, it would just bore me to death. So,
but what made you think that you could be a writer? I mean, obviously you thought you could be a boxer, too.
I mean, yeah, and I certainly wouldn't have done very well at that. There's an old line Hemingway used about when he was younger. It says, you suspicioned that you were going to be pretty good. And I think part of it is just the sense of that I could ape the sound of what I was reading. I could sound like Walt Whitman's Song of Myself without actually copying the poem. I could sound like it. So I don't know. And then gradually, you know, people start saying, you really ought to do this. You've got, you know.
Did you have teachers that encouraged you?
Teachers, yes, mm-hmm. and family and stuff like that. And Bob, my brother, wrote a novel when he was in the eighth grade, so it was sort of planted. It was called Hidden Glory. It was a Civil War book that he was illustrating, and the whole family was all excited about it. My sister was typing up chapters for him and stuff. And
this is your twin brother,
yeah,
Robert.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a thing. And, of course, you know, my father and mother, everybody in the family tells stories. I mean, we grew up listening to all those stories. I never had any doubt about what a story was or how to tell a story. Regarding the art of writing short stories, that was a thing I had to teach myself and learned from the great writers. But never had any doubt about characters and, you know, people moving through stories.
Richard Bausch is a novelist. His latest book is called Violence. We'll take a short break and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Richard Bausch is my guest. He's a writer and has written five novels now and two books of short stories. His latest novel is called Violence. There was a time, though, you wanted to be a musician,
yeah,
or a rock musician.
Yeah.
What happened to that?
I reached the end of the possibilities in the key of G. And realized that I wasn't going to get much further than that. And now I have a son who's playing, you know, Jimi Hendrix and wants me to play guitar with him. And it's kind of funny because, you know, I'm so far behind him. It's like, you know, okay, Dad, now we're going to count one, two, three. There we go, Dad. Shift keys, Dad. And I feel real bad for him trying to hold himself back for me. But he loves to play, so.
But wasn't it Bob Dylan, though, that was your, I mean, like all of us back then, the person that you wanted to fashion yourself after?
I was going to be another Bob Dylan or another Paul Simon. You know, I was going to write songs that had meaning and, you know, poem songs. I still have a song called Harlem that I think is a pretty damn good song, and other songs that are sort of echoes of Joni Mitchell and other songwriters that I like, but... And I still occasionally write a song, but the melodies are real dull and not very interesting. And, you know, maybe out of the hundreds of songs I tried, there's probably four of them that I remember that are worth anything.
Yeah.
In the sense that somebody might sing them and they'd be, at least you wouldn't say, oh, that's terrible.
Do you write with music playing?
Uh-huh. Usually. Especially when I'm composing, I like to have. The Mozart quintet, you know, the clarinet quintet is beautiful to write to. And there's others. I even write to some sweeping, big, heavy symphonies, but then you tend to really make flourishes there at the end. You know, toward the end of the Resurrection Symphony, all of a sudden the cadences get pretty heroic, and, you know, you're supposed to be in a store buying a loaf of bread, and it doesn't really...
But you don't use Jimi Hendrix then as a backdrop?
No, I can't. Yeah. Rock and roll.
No,
I can't.
It's hard.
My kids want to study to rock and roll, and they'd say, well, you work right listening to music. I said, well, it's different. Classical music is... different. It's a music that you can hear with your subconscious. Yeah. It's amazing to me how well I know a piece of music after I've written to it and then go hear it played, and I know what's coming, even though I have not consciously sat there and listened to it. It's just in the background.
Well, let me ask you a practical question, because as much as writing is you know, a wonderful, lofty career goal to have, it's hard to make a living. And it seems that most of your books have been published in the last 10 or 12 years. What about the lean times? How did you survive that?
Karen and I survived it. There were times when it was pretty tough, but having come through it, we both feel that it was worth it. But, I mean, we had some tough times, some very tough times.
You're talking tough financially?
All
tough
of it.
In all
whole
ways?
Way, every way.
Did you think of, I can't do this? I can't be a writer anymore?
I would talk about it. Karen would say, what are you going to do, change your nature? I mean, at one point I was offered a job, and I like to tell this story. I sat down and Karen lined up all the things that would come with that job, security and all the rest, and then listed the one disadvantage, that I'd hate it, and I'd come home at night hating myself. And so we said no to this job that would have meant security and went through another year of real trouble. I mean, creditors banging on the door.
Really?
And that kind of thing, yeah.
How do you write under that kind of pressure?
Oh, that's when you really write. You write like crazy then. It's a hell of a lot easier to write then than it is when your people are, you know, calling you to tell you how great everything is and how much they like your work and stuff. Then it becomes hard because, well, I'm good. You know, I'll wait until tomorrow. I can do this in a week.
Get lazy?
It's easy to get lazy. You have to really watch out for it. One of the ways I fight it is just to be disciplined about it and exclude it, not read the reviews, that kind of stuff. Because this is too hard a thing to do without everything you got.
And I guess reviews are kind of like taking your temperature all the time, or sort of, you know, see, how am I doing?
I don't go into bookstores much now.
Yeah.
You know,
to see where they put your book or something.
Yeah, and maybe it's not there, and then I have 3 days of depression about that. You know, and there's no sense worrying about that stuff. The thing is to get it written. Keats said, remember me as one whose name was written water. You know, and you have to accept that as a part of your destiny, or else you're really doomed.
You've said, I don't know if it's still true, that short stories were your first love, and you described them as recreation, and novels you saw as commitment. I could see how they both would be love, but very different, of course.
Yeah. Novels are, they come out of obsession. Short stories come out of whimsy. And although a lot of obsession gets in them before it's all over with, but for me, a short story is like, well, I'm going to write a story, yeah. And it may take me 6 months to do it, but it's just that, you know, a novel, which may take 4 months, is just an entire commitment to a whole universe that you're gonna have to do a lot of homework, you know, the whole thing. It's tough.
Well, how do you know you're gonna set out to do a short story versus a novel?
I don't always know. I thought Violence was a short story.
Uh-huh.
And realized about 10 or 12 pages in that it was a novel. I came home and told Karen, I really am gonna write a novel called Violence. I mean, I thought I was gonna do this short story. But she said, you know, well, great. We need the money. You know, we make a lot more money with novels than short stories.
Do you think it's any accident that both you and your brother are writers and you're twins?
Mm-mm. No. It feels like what we should be doing. It feels as inevitable as anything. I mean, it feels as inevitable as the fact that we're both past 40 now.
Mm-hmm. But do you help each other? Or, I mean, as writers,
talk about it. I mean, when he has difficulty with his work, I'll talk to him in a general way and tell him what I went through with mine, and vice versa. Yeah, there's times when he got really discouraged on this book he published last year,
Almighty Me.
Yeah, and I kept telling him, well, you know, it's just par for the course. It's the third novel. It's hard. It's the hardest one. And he just, you know, I wrote 4 manuscripts between my second and third novels. And that kind of thing, you know. But generally, we're really just, you know, how do you feel? Good. Yeah, me too. I feel okay, too. I guess we're both all right then, yeah. So.
Now, you're working on another novel, is that right?
Mm-hmm. It's called Rebel Powers. I really like it a lot. It's a first-person novel. Somebody's telling it all the way through.
Uh-huh.
About an event that happened 20 years ago and that I made up. Uh-huh. That's fun. But, you know, I'm about halfway finished.
Yeah. Well, I realize it's probably not even... I don't know if you're a guy who believes in bad luck or good luck, but I don't know. Most writers don't like to talk about what they're involved in.
Oh, I know, but that's I think that's kind of precious. I don't mind talking about it. I've told people, I remember at the end of the Man Who Knew Bell Star, I was in a restaurant with a friend saying, I've got her at the edge of this road saying, did I get you, McRae? Did I get you? And I was having so much fun. I was telling him the end of the story, and I didn't even know it yet.
Oh, yeah.
If you just relaxed about it and it's a sort of, if you trust your subconscious and you don't think about it, it's not intellectual, it's a thing you just do, then it's really hard to mess yourself up, you know. You have to be pretty dumb to mess yourself up that way. And if you separate it out, I mean, Hemingway would stop and then read Dumb Magazine. Mary Lee Settle, who's a wonderful writer, between books she reads, you know, mysteries. She's the one who taught me that. I was trying to write Take Me Back and I was all wound up like a... You know, I kept saying, I don't understand. And she said, oh, Richard, you just got to get stupid. Just look at a lot of dumb TV and read a lot of mystery stories and relax. Let the urn fill up, she said.
That's novelist Richard Bausch. His latest book is called Violence. This is Fresh Air.